Welcome. You are listening to the CMS Luxembourg podcast, where our legal experts and industry leaders from around the world provide key insight on a diverse range of topics. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Good afternoon and welcome to our CMS Transfer Pricing podcast. We are pleased to welcome Frédéric Feiten, Head of the Tax Department and Managing Partner of CMS Luxembourg, Imelda Navarro Arroyo, Senior Transfer Pricing Specialist at CMS Luxembourg, and Stéphane Gelin, Head of the CMS Tax Group and Tax Partner at CMS Francis Lefebvre. Frédéric, Imelda and Stéphane, welcome and thank you for joining us today. For today's podcast, we will focus on ongoing impact of COVID-19. More specifically, our expert will discuss about transfer pricing challenges businesses are facing during this COVID-19 period. Frédéric, to start, could you please set the scene and explain us whether CMS clients have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic? Have you noticed any change in their investment activity?
Thank you, Delphine. Well, I must say that we have not experienced much difference in the behavior of our clients in 2020, which is likely explained by the fact that the deals we were working on carried decisions which were taken prior to the pandemic. The exception is perhaps traditional M&A, which saw a significant decrease in the first three quarters of 2020, and then with some recovery end of 2022. Now, we do see in 2021 some continued caution, but having said this, for example, real estate remains an active asset class because of its steady and secured income yields, with a particular interest in logistics and data centers, in our experience. And in the context of transfer pricing, the financing of new acquisitions, refinancing, as well as changes in the finance market, generate demand for transfer pricing benchmark studies. Other asset classes where we have seen increased activity are, for example, digital assets, things like crypto funds, but also tokenization, distressed debt portfolios, and also more particular asset classes such as litigation funding. And finally, we understand that in some regions like the US, private equity fundraising has never been higher, especially the area of technology. And this should definitely drive the market activity in the end and deal making, and ultimately generate demand for transfer pricing work.
Many thanks, Frédéric. Imelda and Stéphane, we all know that comparability analysis is an essential step in any transfer pricing analysis. Could you please explain us how the situation created by the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the comparability analysis? Do you also think that transfer pricing adjustment should be implemented? And finally, could you please explain to our listeners how companies should document or adjust any differences in profit margins? Imelda, maybe you want to start?
Sure. Thanks, Delphine. Now, to answer to your question, I think it is essential to first determine what does the comparability analysis actually entail. In most cases, when performing a benchmark analysis, transfer pricing practitioners are performing a comparison with independent third-party transactions. That being said, the benchmark analysis is by nature a historical study, which is based on data that is made available with a time lag. I mean a gap between the closing date of the comparable financial statements and their availability in the different public databases. In this way, performing a benchmark analysis for the fiscal years that have been impacted by the COVID pandemic, let's say 2020, 2021, and maybe probably 2022, using the financial information from the years that have not been impacted by the pandemic, will in most cases impact the comparability and therefore deviate from the arm's length standard. Now, to tackle this issue, the OECD has released in December 2020 guidance on the TP implications on COVID. This guidance suggests several practical approaches that the taxpayers can apply. For example, the use of contemporaneous information, the use of an outcome testing approach instead of an ex ante or a price setting approach, and the use of more than one TP methods to perform a sort of sanity check of the results obtained. Even after following any of these approaches, the use of comparability adjustments might still be required. To name a few examples, some of the TP adjustments that might be relevant are the losses in revenues, the cost of goods sold, and the governmental grants. In my opinion, when using third-party financial information, comparability adjustments will be necessary in most cases. And this means, of course, that the comparability analysis is becoming a more complex exercise for now and in the near future.
Thank you, Imelda. Stéphane, do you want to share any practical experience?
Yes, thank you, Delphine. So in France, most of our clients are entrepreneurs, and the challenge was to compute a year-end adjustment back in December 2020 to assess what should be the profits of their routine affiliates. And as Imelda mentioned, of course, no comparable data was available for 2020. So we tried and simulate the impact of the economic crisis based on 2019 P&Ls of comparable companies. So for instance, let's assume that the routine affiliates are distributors and are buying products from the French entrepreneur. So what we did is look at the decrease of turnover of our routine affiliate, the tested party, and apply it to the revenues of comparable companies. Then we simulated a decrease of their variable costs, which are typically costs of goods sold, based on their historical gross margin. And then we applied a regression analysis for fixed costs. And then we were able to compute a corresponding net operating profit for 2020 based on the historical data for 2019. This approach, which we used in December 2020, may still need to be duplicated in 2021 for documentation purposes in case there is a tax audit going on today while we still don't have the data for year 2020.
Thank you, Stéphane. So what about limited risk companies? Do you think that these limited risk companies should bear some of the burden created by the pandemic? I mean, costs related to the COVID-19 itself, but also the losses which have been generated during this period?
Yes, well, as in many scenarios within transfer pricing, Delphine, this is a case-by-case analysis. So the first step would be to accurately delineate the transaction and to perform or to review your functional analysis. Now, in a pre-pandemic scenario, the tax authorities from several jurisdictions were reluctant to accept limited risk entities in a loss-making situation, in a loss-making position, under the argument that these entities should always earn a low, but in any case, a stable profit, as they do not undertake significant risks. In this regard, the OECD, in the guidance on COVID, has dedicated a whole section to discuss the losses. However, the general principle is actually nothing new. This is that the losses should follow the risks assumed. So for example, think of a limited risk distributor that assumes the local market risks in its own jurisdiction. Even though this company has been profitable in previous years, due to a decrease in sales because of possible lockdowns or government mandates, etc., the company will report losses. We cannot rule out that limited risk entities may report losses for a few years. We have to keep in mind that limited risk does not mean risk-free. And to continue with your question, the same goes for the costs. The cost related to a certain risk should be incurred by the party who assumes that risk. And in practice, if we think about an M&A, each local entity assumes their operational risks. These are the risks derived, for example, for performing the day-to-day activities. This cost would then be assumed by each local entity. In this category, we can classify, for example, to name a few, the cost from performing COVID tests, the protection materials, masks, disinfectants, etc. And finally, regarding the costs, we have to keep in mind that an important distinction should be made between the extraordinary, non-recurring, and the recurring costs. Because this distinction is very important because, in principle, the extraordinary costs should be excluded from net profit indicators, as in general, they do not relate to the transaction on their analysis. It is important to keep in mind that consistency should always also prevail when determining a cost basis.
Obviously, it's too early to conclude on the outcome of a benchmark analysis for year 2020, but one can reasonably expect that in the retail business, where shops were closed for several months, independent companies would suffer a loss. Does that mean that our routine distributor could report a loss, as Imelda mentioned? It's really the question we had to deal with last year with our clients. Another argument to push down a loss to the retail companies is that it's been seen during that crisis that third parties agree to share losses to avoid a potential bankruptcy of their client. In the very retail business, landlords have accepted to waive a part of rental payments during the crisis. So there are indeed arguments to share a portion of the losses with the limited risk distributors, for instance. As Imelda stated, the OECD guidelines do not close the door to such an option. Yet, does it make real sense from a practical standpoint? First, it's very likely that local tax administrations, as Imelda mentioned, will consider that it's the responsibility of the entrepreneur to protect its affiliates against economic downturns, since when everything is fine, the entrepreneur doesn't share the extra profit with the local affiliate. And if we push down such losses in the countries of the retailers, disputes with tax administration are to be expected, which may lead to long and difficult mutual agreement procedures. There is another reason why pushing losses to local affiliates make little sense. It's from an effective tax rate standpoint for the group. Assuming that business will go back soon to normal, which everybody hopes, of course, future profits of local affiliates will be limited under the current transfer pricing policy, and it may take years for them to offset the 2020 tax losses, while the entrepreneur will be able to use all those losses much quickly against 2021 or 2022 profits. So as a consequence, our advice to clients was to set the profit level of local affiliates to zero for year 2020, as opposed to the loss that would come from a simulation I described earlier, which reduced the exposure of tax disputes in many countries. Of course, we'll have to deal with the French tax administration, who may ask that losses be indeed shared with foreign affiliates, but it's much better to have a discussion with your local tax administration as opposed to with 10 foreign tax administrations.
That's true. Thank you very much. You mentioned earlier government grants. Globally, most governments have provided financial assistance and different types of incentive to companies. Could you please tell us more about the subsidies that have been granted by the French and by the Luxembourg governments, and how multinational enterprises should deal with this government assistance program? I mean, how it should treat them for transfer pricing purposes?
Yes, so here in Luxembourg, the government has reacted to the pandemic by putting in place several programs for economic stabilization. Specifically, government grants with financial aid for micro, medium, and large companies that have been suffered from the negative impacts of COVID. In some cases, to access the grants, it is necessary to demonstrate that the company has suffered a major loss in turnover. In other cases, the grant should go directly to cover operating costs. From a transfer pricing perspective, the government assistance programs are considered to be part of the specific market conditions of a certain jurisdiction. And in this way, in accordance to the guidelines, to the OECD guidelines, this should be included in the TP documentation of taxpayers. Now, as a second step, it is important also to determine whether or not this government support might be set off against specific costs. And such determination should be based on whether there is a direct link between the costs and the governmental in the governmental supports. Now, another a last note from my side regarding these assistance programs is the possible impact on the governmental grants on the comparability analysis, because it's possible that comparable companies may not have been granted with this support, or the other way around, that your tested party has not been granted with such support. And so to this extent, transfer pricing adjustments should be made in order to improve the comparability.
Yes, in France, there were similar measures provided by the government. The main one was the so-called partial activity scheme, where employees could receive unemployment indemnities while still on the payroll of their employers, which helped them to reduce their fixed cost, of course. More recently, under the recommendation of the EU Commission, France has relaxed its tax losses carried back rules. Losses incurred for the fiscal year closed between June 30, 2020 and June 30, 2021. In short, for most businesses, the fiscal year 2020 can be carried back without limitation over the three preceding years, instead of a maximum of 1 million over the past year for the standard rules. Actually, same rules have been relaxed in the UK and in Germany, and in Portugal and the Netherlands, there've been a relaxing of the carried forward losses. Obviously, and under the approach we described for adjusting 2019 data to benchmark 2020 profits, we would have to take into account the government subsidies such as the unemployment scheme, which reduced a fixed cost. The good news is that absolutely every company in France has benefited from that scheme, so there is no problem from a comparability standpoint.
Thank you. So to conclude our discussion, which advice would you like to give to business leaders who are listening to our podcast?
Well, from my side, the most valuable advice I can give is to document as much as possible, to document the decision-making processes, the changes in supply chains, the changes in transfer prices as such, keep track of the extraordinary expenses that are directly linked to COVID, and make sure that if the time comes and you need to defend your position taken during the pandemic, that you are bulletproof and that you are protected as a taxpayer. Now, one item that has not been included in the guidance of the OECD, but that has certainly a lot of relevance during the pandemic, is the increase in the intercompany financing arrangements. Now, in this way, I would advise also taxpayers to approach their advisors and to raise the relevant questions in this regard. Regarding from a more practical perspective regarding the benchmark analysis, in accordance to the OECD guidelines, these were valid for 3 years, the benchmark analysis as such. But yeah, and this is for most jurisdictions. Of course, there are some exceptions. Keeping in mind the effects of COVID, it might be appropriate that taxpayers review their benchmarks on a yearly basis. I think a lot of groups and companies were and will continue not to reach their levels of profitability in these years, and therefore it cannot be excluded that in the upcoming years tax authorities will initiate tax audits focused on the transfer prices of taxpayers. So again, my advice would be document as much as possible.
Thank you very much. So Frédéric, Imelda and Stéphane, thank you again for joining us today and for sharing your experience.
Thank you for listening to the CMS Luxembourg podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to visit our website and subscribe to stay up to date with our legal content. Until next time.